Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I can't believe it, it's 2017. Happy New Year.
I've heard you on my wireless back in 52, lying awake intent and tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Well, it's the winter break and we're all sitting around scratching our heads, wondering what to do. Part of the reason for that is because it's just so marvellous being a Celtic supporter just now after our last domestic fixture, which we will talk about in this podcast. We've had our break and our next domestic fixture will be against a longer established team in Albion Rovers in the league, and then we play umpty-dumpty home league games, catching up on the head start that they tried to give other teams this season. There's lots going on with Celtic FC Foundation. There's the Walfred's Wish that I'm sure you're all been looking up on and seeing how you can get involved with the foundation and have your constant giving, and there'll be more of that on the website, but please log into the Celtic FC Foundation and look into how you can continue to enhance the fantastic work that they are doing, and there'll be a podcast about that along soon. However, it's the first podcast of 2017 from us here at Celtic Underground Tour, so I thought I would contact our Argentinian correspondent, Mark Cooper, who's back down in the capital in Buenos Aires after a trip to the UK and Europe, which involved an unexpected stop off to meet Pope Francis. So, this is myself and Mark Cooper discussing the game against the Rangers, the poor media coverage of Scottish football, particularly relevant to Mark coming from a country which is as obsessed as we are, but then treats the fans with the coverage they deserve for that obsession. And then we talk briefly about our new signings as I then trot off to my little boy who decided at 10 o'clock at night that he was too wide awake to go to bed. Anyway, enough of that. This is me, Harry Beattie, with him, Mark Cooper. So I'm joined by Mark Cooper. Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year to Harry. I'm very good. Happy New Year to everyone listening. Yeah, I'm great.
Before we start, I always like to get my weather update from Argentina. It's minus 1.5, I think, at the moment in Glasgow. So how are things down the southern hemisphere?
It's been oscillating between 28 and 34 degrees.
You poor soul. Is that Fahrenheit or Celsius?
Celsius. Yeah, I was just thinking about the Rangers fans are having a lovely winter sun break in East Germany this weekend.
I know. You get a winter break, so you go to somewhere that's even colder than Scotland.
I had a look at the weather report for Sunday. I think the high is going to be minus one. It should be enjoyable.
Do you know, it reminded me a wee bit the opposite of this in terms of where we're in Scotland and it's cold up here, so we're going to mainland Europe, it's always warmer in there, that's where we go for summer holidays. Yeah. The opposite of that reminds me of, I remember Tommy Docherty talking about Scotland qualifying for the, was it the 54, 58 World Cup that was in Switzerland?
Okay, yeah.
And he said that the SFA just knew that Switzerland was where there was lots of skiing in Switzerland. So the the Scottish strip was woolly polo neck jumpers. And he said we went out in dark blue woolly polo neck jumpers, and of course it was like 80, 90 degrees. So yeah, it was. So maybe they're thinking, well, mainland Europe, we go there on holiday, it must be warm. So you're back in Argentina.
Yeah, I'm only recently back, just a day or two.
Yes, because you've been doing a tour of Europe.
A tour of Europe via Alitalia, where they never have their connecting flights actually being on time, so I had a lovely
they need Mussolini back because he can make things run on time.
So it was actually okay. I had 24 hours. They put me up in the Hilton. Myself and other Argentinian passengers had a tab going on the Hilton courtesy of Alitalia, although they didn't know about it. And pot to the Vatican Colosseum, pizza, pasta, ice cream, all the stereotypes. And I'm just back.
But within that trip, of the stereotypes of cathedrals and the like, you found yourself at Ibrox.
What a brilliant segue. Yes, it's hard to say a big thank you to my best pal's dad, Colin Hutchison, who very, very generously gave up his ticket for me. So thank you to Colin Hutchison. I was able to... A complete glory boy, arriving in for the Celtic Rangers game.
There's all these thousands of Celtic season book holders who couldn't get a ticket for Ibrox, and you live in Argentina, and you were there.
Yeah, I apologise to you all, although I wouldn't have given up a ticket. But I apologise. But yeah, it was great. You were there as well, right?
I was, yeah. What are you implying?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. The atmosphere, the Celtic fans were superb.
So you got in particularly, I think I was still in the house when you were tweeting pictures or Instagramming pictures of him being there. So you got in particularly early to soak up the atmosphere. How did it build up?
Well, I went out, you know, the little section behind the Celtic end, the kind of almost like a car park area.
Yeah.
I mean, I was around there with my pal Stephen, and I was kind of scanning the crowd for any cousins, uncles, yourself. And then after about 15 minutes, this guy, Stephen, was like, let's go in. It's absolutely Baltic. So went inside. Just like the whole building. Also because it's now 10 years since I've moved. Well, not moved here, but 10 years since I first went to South America. And in that time, I probably spent about 6 years in South America. And... So, like, coming back and going to a Celtic Rangers game, I'm completely into it as a Celtic fan, but I'm also kind of aware of kind of cultural differences that we have. And because I've been to, like, Boca River and Rosario and Strath Mules and stuff like that. Like, big derbies here.
Yeah.
But they don't have that kind of... Boca River doesn't have that intensity that we have. They probably have more of a spectacle in terms of, like, there's like smoke bombs going off all around the stadium and a ticket coming down and stuff like that. But the actual game, it doesn't have the intensity of, say a Rangers player kicks the ball 50 yards across the pitch and it goes out of play, for instance
random
completely, yeah, and Rangers get it thrown
after the ball's been put back into play and played on for another 20 seconds or whatever,
yeah, and there's a through ball for Scott Sinclair to be 1-1 with the keeper. In that situation, the crowd reaction from the Celtic fans is probably a lot more than it would be in South America, I think. And just every little challenge, you know, like every pretty meaningless decision or whatever, the actual game is kind of followed more intensely than would be here. Whereas the atmosphere is great here, but there is a kind of a weird kind of intensity and like, and also they're like culturally, like obviously, like we're so kind of ingrained in it. But as a kind of outsider, there's quite a cultural difference between the two clubs. Like, it isn't like one team wears red and one team wears, you know, white or something like that. It is like, it's quite notable, like, to be back. And like, for instance, I got a taxi from the city centre of Glasgow, and it kind of went, it didn't go by a motorway, it kind of went over a bridge and kind of into like a back way into Ibrox, and it was passing like Loudon Tavern, and there's a Govan Masonic Hall, mm-hmm. where like people were streaming in, like hundreds of people kind of like streaming in and out as we're kind of crawling in the traffic around them. And just, it is quite kind of tangible, the kind of cultural differences between the two clubs. Even the way they supported, like, our support was pretty kind of good-natured and, like, happy. And, like, everyone knows, everyone listening to this is kind of like going, yeah, we know. But as a kind of, I'm not an outsider, but kind of thinking about it, were I an Argentinian just being dropped into a game, I think I'd be aware of the kind of the difference in the nature of the support. Anyway.
I completely get your point. I remember years ago, one of my mates who's a Rangers fan commenting on how we had, so this is maybe 10, 12 years ago, we had a plethora of fans' websites and they had follow. And he commented on, in the modern 21st century, the bulk of fans live side by side, work side by side, grow up side by side. Nowadays, you don't have the same separation that predates our generation. Yet, there is, I remember him saying he thinks someone should employ Glasgow University to study just how different, getting back to, there is a tangible cultural difference between the fans, yet Monday to Friday, we sit beside, we live beside, we eat beside. Yeah. There's nothing that your Argentinian friend parachuted in. It's not going to walk along the street and immediately go, oh, I see what you say. Just walking through Buchanan Street, you can see the Celtic fans there and the Rangers fans there. But on match day, it's obvious. And culturally about supporting the club, it's different.
I remember there's an instance, it happens all the time, but I remember Rangers scoring a goal away at Panathinaikos one time. And the camera pans to the small away section, and a large section of the Rangers supporters seem to be more kind of intent on kind of celebrating to kind of rile the Panathinaikos fans by turning away and like towards the Panathinaikos fans in a confrontational kind of way, rather than just a kind of elation of scoring a goal themselves. It was a much more kind of confrontational kind of approach. And you kind of see that when maybe like the England national team go away, or Chelsea go away, and how they like comport themselves when they're abroad is a kind of more us against them confrontational way that I think
arrogant.
Even more Rangers fans, I think, would be able to see that a little bit. Like sometimes they criticise us for being too kind of needy in our support, everyone likes us, blah blah blah. But that is a kind of more, Celtic fans abroad are much more kind of convivial and kind of will be chatting to the locals, I think, more than, you know, the typical kind of British football fan who goes away. Anyway, back to the game.
But also on the atmosphere, I don't know whether, I mean, granted, it's a different team, but it's the same fans in the same stadium.
Yeah.
I've always felt that, you know, this concept of let's have between four and six Celtic Rangers games a season to maximise the commerciality of it. You know, getting back to I love a chicken turban style from the Tub and Tandoori in Giffnock. But if I had one every week, I'd hate it. So the same principle of there is a part of me that wondered whether the atmosphere was even more, the differences between was even more tangible, because we've not played at Ibrox for 4 or 5 years.
And
I've always felt it would be better for Scottish football if teams were playing each other twice a season instead of four times. to make it even more special when the teams do meet. So I don't know whether that added to what you were sensing, your absence allied to the supporters' absence from each other.
Because in fact, the last time I was at a Celtic Rangers away game was probably one of the last ones. It was Samaras's one, which there's probably only about, it was Samaras's 2-0 one, so there's probably only about two or three Celtic Rangers ones apart from that. Where I hadn't thought about that at all, actually.
So the game itself, talk me through it, Mark.
I think it's been slightly overstated, the supposed dominance of Rangers in the first 20-25 minutes. We were a bit of a shambles, but I think we still had a few opportunities. I seem to remember Armstrong hitting it wide or something. There's obviously a time when Sinclair was put through by Ezaguirre, which was taken back for an obvious Rangers throw-in. possibly one or two of the Sinclair offsides would have occurred during that time. But obviously the passing between the defence and the midfield did obviously, you know, come out you know, pressing our midfield and pressing that ball from a defence to midfield, and we couldn't get into any rhythm at all. And then it's when they would kind of turn over the ball, they're actually pretty dangerous. Like Miller's movement was pretty good the whole game, and Mackay on about three occasions. There's obviously a time like right at the start when he won them a free kick after about 20 seconds or something when Lustig took him out.
Windass
played two very good balls. There's a one where for the goal for Tavernier, where Izzy's, you know, Svechenko gives it to them basically. Izzy slightly switches off and it goes through. But then there's the other time where Windass does an almost identical ball behind Ezaguirre for Tavernier. Tavernier then kind of cuts it back and Gordon has to kind of dive out and punch it.
So
both of those Windass passes were pretty impressive. I was impressed with Mackay. The nice thing about Mackay, now,
because I'm in Argentina, I don't hear all the hype about these players, so like since then there's been almost a bit of a backlash about praising Mackay at all in that game, going, yeah, but he's not blah 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 blah. But actually, to be fair, he had a very good game, and what he did very nicely was that he would when he's like dribbling with the ball, when he's carrying the ball, he can change angle pretty well at about 45 degrees and retain the ball with him and seemingly not lose any pace. Like there's a time when he did a Lustig right at the start, but then there's also a time when they were breaking away in the second half and it led to Miller's chance.
And I think they might have we might have had a corner or something, or we had a free kick or some sort of incident like that,
and it basically breaks to him just outside our box and he's running diagonally. And I think it might be Brown who's kind of like covering him or ushering him that way.
And he just completely switches at 45 degree. And you just see him like run through like the middle of the pitch. And no one's kind of anticipated this change of direction. So
to be fair to Mackay, I was pretty impressed with him.
But after that, after about a 25 minute period, when... it was, for me, it was basically about 50-50, to be honest. And maybe they had a slight edge. And, you know, being a much worse team, it was kind of surprising. So, you know, it might be hyped up a little bit. But, you know, if those offsides weren't given, then you'd imagine Sinclair's rolling the ball across for Forrest to score. For the second one, I think it was. And, you know... we didn't play well, but it wasn't as it's been slightly exaggerated. After about a 30 minute mark, then we kind of controlled the next 15 minutes. Wilson's absolutely terrible in that corner. Firstly, he's got Dembele, right?
Yeah.
Remember, he has Dembele.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He's on Dembele at the start, right? He loses Dembele. But it's such a kind of high-floated ball that he almost still has time. He sees, like, Dembele's kind of gone around a few players, and he's still got time to get hold of him again, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And he's about, like, 3 yards away from him, say. But then he has the amazing idea that he's going to run kind of more towards the goal, away from Dembele, and clear this ball. And had he stayed more or less where he was before he made that decision, he would have probably have headed it away, or he would have been close to Dembele to maybe get a block in. But no, he goes about 3 yards, jumps up in the air, completely misses the ball.
Yeah.
The second mistake, Dembele's there probably thinking, who the hell is this guy? As the ball's coming down onto his foot. Lovely first touch control on his right, bounces. And it's just, it's such a nice feeling when you're in a Celtic end and you're just watching it all happen.
Yeah.
From about like 100 metres away, and you just see it, and he just cracks this ball in the back of it. Oh, it's glorious.
It's interesting you see about the, it was not as much as people made out about the Rangers' dominance for the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Because Brendan Rodgers made a comment in the post-match interview, which again we'll get on to the inability to hear a post-match interview in Scottish football. Brendan Rodgers makes a comment about Rangers were the better team for the first half hour, but thereafter, for the next hour, we were a better team. I know, or I understand, that when Celtic reanalysed that first half hour, they think Rangers were the better team for maybe 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Thereafter, it was the other 20 minutes was 50-50, and then the next 60 minutes was all us.
Yeah.
And the other thing, because you were saying about me getting to the game, because I actually, out of the people that I knew, I was the only one who had a ticket. So I was Johnny No Mates, and at half time I was listening to Radio Scotland, and they were talking about how well Rangers had played, and they made the point, obviously I don't watch Rangers games so I don't know, they made the point though about how Rangers fell out of it at 30 minutes, and they said, which is the norm for Rangers this season, even in the games when they played well and they might have got to 2-0 up, they have then been struggling to hang on for the last half hour. And as soon as they said that, I thought, right, so if normally their very, very best is they can only be dominant for an hour,
yeah,
they are playing a team that's twice as good at twice the pace. So maybe that half hour is the maximum they'll manage. And
yeah,
that proved to be the case.
Yeah.
The first goal, take you back to the first goal. One of the things that all my time as a football fan has bugged me is when a player stops for a split second to stick his arm up. What were you? I was always told playing football as a kid, play to the whistle.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Izaguirre sticks his hand up.
Yes.
And it's, and you just think, it just hesitates him for a split second. See if he's not stuck his hand up for that split second, the cross doesn't come in.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing, their goal and our second goal were very similar. And I did think it was interesting, they both came down the left fullback position, and both teams were not playing with their first choice left fullback, which I thought was an interesting point. What do you think Celtic did? Oh, sorry, did Celtic do anything to change that pattern of play to become more dominant, or was it just Rangers fell out of it?
The Celtic quite evidently, they're very well drilled. When the ball was going into Dembele, there was people running off him. It seemed to be quite kind of like, it was consistent where there'd be a ball up to someone and there'd be a like 5 yard pass into Armstrong or McGregor's path, or you know, or it's flipped around the corner into Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
and it seemed to be like everything was a bit quicker. The passing from the back was getting through to midfield, and they were looking up and were releasing it quite quickly. It was such an end-to-end game, which doesn't, it kind of implies it's a 50-50 game, but no. But it was so kind of open the whole game. It was bizarre. Like, from the, I think Forrest had a chance after like 50 minutes where he's like through on Fodringham and Fodringham saves or something like that. And it seemed like the kind of chance you get with 10 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Where like the opposition's completely
the game's
exhausted.
Really stretched and yeah.
Yeah. I remember like my pal just looking at me staring and we're kind of like, what? Why is it so open just now? And to an extent, it was the same with us. Like, as I was saying before about Mackay kind of going through our midfield kind of unchallenged. Like, I don't actually think we played that well in that game, to be honest. In that first half, had we been playing against Mönchengladbach, I think we might have been 2 or 3 nil down, mm-hmm. to be honest. But it's one of the benefits about playing the SPL again. But basically, the most evident thing to me, at least, just watching from the Celtic games, was how organised we were, running off and giving it to Dembele. He seemed to retain the ball under pressure almost every single time. And just is laying off the ball to our like 3 or 4 on running midfielders, so wide attackers or whatever. And we're away, like it seemed to, most attacks seemed to kind of emanate from that.
And what did you make of Forrest has patently deserved to be above Patrick Roberts in the pecking order this season?
Mm-hmm.
But Roberts immediately seemed to just have more space when he was on the park compared to what Forrest had had, and obviously was involved in the second goal.
Well, when did he come? He came on about 75 minutes, yeah. Right? About 70 minutes?
It's about 70 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. But to be honest, I think most Celtic fans would have agreed that would have been the ideal situation.
Mm-hmm.
That Forrest puts in running, he tracks back, and in the last 20 minutes, we have someone in Roberts who can do something and change a game if it's needed to. He's like, for that goal, he's very comfortable coming inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a few times when he had the ball in the left wing and I wanted him to completely do their left back, which he's sometimes capable of doing, like completely eliminating a full back from the game. And he was cutting inside, he was cutting inside. And the good thing was that Armstrong was running all day.
Well,
so for that goal, Armstrong gives it out with a very good pass, about a 20-yard accurate firm pass. He carries on that run for about, what, 35, 40 yards or something? Uh-huh. And Roberts is so comfortable in the ball, just drifting inside, and the pass goes through, like, perfectly into Armstrong.
It was like, you know, one of these kids' TV programmes or something like that, where Armstrong gets an invisibility cloak because he just goes through, and it's almost as if it's not, you don't even see a Rangers player pointing at him for somebody else to pick him up.
Yeah,
you know, it's as if nobody can see him for him to continue that pass. And you know, in this modern world where people talk about number 10s and they don't give players positions, I thought in that game Brown played number 6 and Armstrong played number 8. If you're going to use numbers, fantastically well.
Yeah.
Of you saying about the ball being played to Dembele and having Willen, Armstrong in the second half in particular was always there for Dembele to get the ball played to him, play it off to Armstrong.
There's one other thing. The midfield was knackered though, right?
Yeah.
They seemed exhausted. But in the whole second half, they seemed absolutely exhausted. It's also a thing about Callum McGregor. It's like the ball he puts in, like McGregor's also kind of running off players. And although I don't think he had the same quality as Armstrong, I don't think he hides at all.
No.
He does show for the ball, like, to his credit. He shows for the ball. And every so often, he does actually show a good bit of technique. Like, there's a time in the first half where the ball's falling. He's on the edge of the box, maybe to the left. And the ball's falling down. And he does a one-touch kind of volley pass, like, straight into Izaguirre's feet, which was a quite nice technique. And there's another time for Dembele's kind of volley that goes, hits a crossbar, and St. Clair should put it in. That ball was from McGregor. It's a very nice ball, actually.
In the same way that on this podcast, in years gone by, the more people went on about how wonderful McGeady was, the more I would sort of try and point out his poor points. It wasn't that I thought he was a bad player. It was just when people were telling me he was the greatest thing since sliced bread, it made me want to say, no, there's these faults to it. It's the opposite with McGregor. The more the Celtic fans either ignore him or bemoan his position, the more I'm thinking, he's not that bad. And I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong, in an ideal Celtic team,
In an ideal Celtic team in 3 years' time, I would hope that we have a significantly kind of better players.
Yes, he's not a starter.
I want us to be a proper, like a Seville team, that kind of, that level of Celtic team that we're all hoping we can reach again.
Yeah. But equally, he does a lot of running, he never hides, and occasionally he puts passes through that are excellent.
Very good. Yeah. There's another element. This is becoming the Cal McGregor show here, but there's another element of his game that he doesn't actually do as much now that he did before and was very good before, is striking the ball.
Yep.
He was actually scoring, like, I remember I was being slated about 2 years ago on the Celtic top 10 Celts of player of the season, blah blah blah, and I had McGregor in at like 9 or 10 or something. And has been called out probably by yourself. Who the hell? How is McGregor snuck into this? And it was because he scored away at Legia Warsaw, he scored away at Maribor, he scored away in Iceland, and he scored maybe against Ajax. Or?
Was he not in Ronnie's first season a top European scorer?
Yeah. So he does also have that aspect to his game. Like, he's. I respect a player who makes the most of his talent.
Yeah,
I quite like that. I quite like that guy. Anyway, and Sinclair. We haven't even mentioned Sinclair. He's so difficult. It's strange watching him play because sometimes he makes mistakes on the ball, but they don't have the confidence to go in and challenge him. Like, they know he's far too quick for him. It's like an exceptional player playing five-a-sides, and no one wants to be made a fool out of. Like, there's a time when, so he's through on goal and he steps on the ball.
Yeah.
And he basically has to run back 5 yards, pick the ball up again, and there's three Rangers players. And if you're a Rangers fan, you're probably thinking, what the hell are you doing?
He's just in the ball, just go take it off him.
Yeah. And we only score from that. Like, he does a dribble, he has a shot.
Which one that hit the post that led to the goal?
Is that right?
One that led to the goal. His shot hits the post, they clear it for the corner. Corner comes in, Wilson goes running around the penalty box, and Dembele scores.
He probably should have actually passed to Forrest. At the moment when he's dribbling again and he has a ball and the Rangers players are kind of backing off him on the edge of the box, Forrest is actually free for it by a second or so, completely free on the other side. But anyway, his link up with Dembele is very good, and it kind of gives you, like, it's almost like a preview of next season in Europe. They were basically playing together. In the first games they were playing together, they probably played about 3-4 games together.
Yeah.
In these first Champions League games. But then like you started to see maybe a way at Mönchengladbach, whenever like Sinclair was getting the ball, you kind of felt, and even away at Barcelona, every time Sinclair got the ball, you got the feeling that anything can happen.
Yeah.
Which it's great to have a player like that away, obviously, like just that outlet of you're under pressure, maybe away at Benfica or whatever, but you know you can just knock a 30-yard ball to your man on the high on the left, and he's just going to take you up to their box, basically.
Which was always, that was always the reason in European football why I liked Samaras. You could play the ball up to him, and you knew he'd take the ball up and then get a foul.
Yeah,
and move the play 30 yards up the park. The other thing that we did fantastically well at the end of the game was waste 2 to 3 minutes on the flags. I mean, I do think it's funny there's still people on New Year's Day tweeting on 5th of January and stuff like that tweeting saying Dembele still got the ball at the corner flag.
that was very impressive. And there's a time the very first one he completely did them, didn't he?
Yeah,
he's pretending he's going to hold it in there and he just spins around. And he's running, and right on the edge of the box, someone completely takes him out. And in fact, there's another time on the other side when the same thing happens, maybe about the fourth or fifth time he's holding the ball. When it was actually, like, I remember watching it again in a replay back home, and it's very close to being a penalty, actually. Not the first one, but the second one from the other side. The guy fouls him about a yard outside the box, but Dembele's still kind of going, and the foul kind of continues until he's in the box. Anyway, Dembele, for a 20-year-old, it's unreal, right?
But there's still parts of the Scottish football who just think the whole 20, 30 million pound thing's completely made up. They can't see a guy who's a French under 21 internationalist who shortly will be, probably sometime in the next 12 months, will get picked for the full French squad, who's playing Champions League football at 20 years of age. The way modern football is, in that everybody wants, for that one striker position, a guy who's got pace, can hold the ball up and can score. Everybody wants someone who does that, and we've got one. To not be able to understand why that's a 20, 30 million pound plus player in the modern world shows their lack of knowledge of modern football.
And especially the Dembele sale to Palace, to me it showed, because these teams now, they're getting 100 million every year. So Liverpool buy Dembele for 30 million. He doesn't work out for them, but there's still a market of, say, 15 clubs in the Premiership who want Dembele still.
Yep.
And the fact that he's failed there, it doesn't matter. They still want him, and they have the money to buy him. So say Tottenham buy Dembele for 30 million, and he doesn't work out for them. Well, there's still 15 other clubs who will take him for 25.
Yep.
West Ham will take him for 25 after he's failed for a year. So there's, and that's worst case scenario, where he basically has a season like the boy Janssen's had at Tottenham, where he just does nothing. The best case scenario is that he's exceptional, and then he's worth, what, 60 million plus or something, don't you? So that's basically the reason. And all the reasons you've already said about his actual abilities and his age, that's also the reason why he is worth 25 million plus.
But I don't know if you were like me, so I've just mentioned that I was on the game so on my own, so I get back in the car and I head home, and I can't hear any post-match interview because Rangers are in dispute with the main audio broadcaster of Scottish football. So there's no post-match interviews. I'd already looked on the TV schedule and seen that I could, and realised I could watch four match of the days, before 3 days later I would get to see the highlights of it. So I'm already thinking in the car, I get in the car and I think, wait a minute, my excitement about wanting to follow up on this game is finished because I can't hear any post-match interviews. Yeah. And I will not be able to watch the highlights package because I don't pay for Sky. And I can watch four matches of the days. And then you make a comment about that on your Twitter. You mentioned the comment that this is, whether we like it or not, this is the sellable game of Scottish football.
Yeah,
and we do nothing with it.
Yeah, it's a significant national cultural sporting event. It's like people around the world are legitimately fascinated by this weird game we have.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a terrible, we're in one of the worst leagues out of, you know, I'm not including like Estonian whatever, but of like
established properly countries,
established,
yeah,
leagues, established kind of countries in European football, where we have one of the worst leagues just now in terms of our standard, and yet we have one of the top 3 or 4 derbies in the world. Mm-hmm. Comfortably top 3 or 4 for me. It's the best, but you know, everyone would basically agree it was in the top 3. And on our state broadcaster, the 8-minute condensed highlights without an interview occurred 50 to 60 hours after. It's just like, for me coming from Argentina, when every day for about 10 days there will be about, on the daytime TV here are basically football shows from say 11 until about like 6 p.m. or something, where they'll just have a round table of about, say, 4 or 5 journalists, and they just go from two-hour programme to two-hour programme to two-hour programme, just talking about the games.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. So if Boca River's coming up or another big game, you're just inundated with everything. I remember my brother came over for a Boca River game, and he's staying with me, and someone's being interviewed on TV, and he says, Mark, who's that being interviewed? Is it the hairdresser of one of the players? So, look, for me to come back for what the whole world agrees basically is one of the biggest derbies in world football, and our state broadcaster doesn't do any preview show and doesn't do a review show until 3 days after. And it's done in a like broom closet. You have no kind of atmosphere of, you know, like the actual game at all.
No.
There's no interviews with any of the players. It's one of the story, one of the, for the game that, what is it, when Legally scored, it was 1-0. It was, I think it was something weird like the 28th of December, when we'd come back from about 11 points back.
Yep.
And Legally scores a header. So weirdly, in about November, the sale of those tickets went on general sale after all of the season ticket holders had the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something like 6 tickets per person, and I bought up 6 of them. I got my mum a ticket, my dad and I had season tickets, got my mum a ticket, my brother a ticket, my friend Stephen, I think I got a ticket, maybe. No, maybe 2 cousins and 2 Swedish guys. And they're in an ultra group of AIK. Mm-hmm. One of them is the one with the microphone, and they're both obsessed with Celtic and always wants to go to an offer, blah, blah, blah. So they come over, and we're staying in some like travel lodge or something in Glasgow, and I say to him, okay, let's go out into Glasgow tonight. It's the night before the game. Go around a few bars. And one of them, Joshua, says to me, do you mind if we stay in until the preview programmes are finished, and then we'll go out? And I go, no, there aren't any. He goes, no, but like, there must be something on about the game. He said, no, there's nothing on. There won't be a radio show, there won't be a TV show on terrestrial TV, on satellite TV, there's nothing. And both of them were just completely bemused by this. Like, they're willing to travel over, and you know, if tickets were available to, like, you know, if you had 100,000 stadia, like how people go over to New Camp in Bernabeu, yep. and how even Europeans and other South Americans fly down to Argentina to watch Boca River. Like, there's three Celtic fans who came down, who were over, like, a few years ago, who came down for it. People all around the world would want to go to this game. And yet, within our country, we don't even acknowledge it happens. It's all pretty weird.
And the only thing we do talk in advance about it is how much the police hate
violent.
It.
Violent.
And the violence. When there's three, when there was three arrests at the game, at the same time there was three arrests at the Edinburgh Hogmanay celebrations. In fact, not connected, but unfortunately one guy was killed in Edinburgh, stabbed down in Leith at Hogmanay after an argument outside a pub. Now, that's not connected with the Hogmanay celebrations, but I see if it had been in Glasgow, they would have connected it to the Celtic Rangers game, because that's the way that we present this fixture.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of that then is part of the debate that you had on Twitter, and I had a wee bit of it as well with Grant Russell from STV. But STV, isn't it wonderful? Scottish football's the only, they portrayed it as a positive, that Scottish, and there is a positive you can take out of it, that Scottish football is the only main league in Europe where the revenue from fans is greater than the revenue from TV. And isn't this wonderful, says the TV channel who doesn't put any money into Scottish football.
Yeah, well, when I kind of posted that up, I was like, about the kind of evident irony of reporting that there's a poor TV contract. Incidentally, it wasn't mentioned, but in the actual UEFA report that I'd read, out of all of the leagues recorded in Europe, Scottish football had the lowest growth out of every single league in Europe. And it wasn't mentioned in their article, but I don't think. But anyway, it has the lowest growth out of any of the broadcast income. Now, for a broadcaster in Scotland that doesn't or puts in minimal amount of income into Scottish football, but have a fairly big team, sports team, to drive users into their website about it, to then report that that we have a terrible TV income, but the fans are great. Well, it's quite obviously quite, you know, it's so obvious, it's quite ironic. It was barely worth posting it up. But yeah, so then I got into a small debate. He's probably a very nice, like, he's a likeable guy. I would probably be, you know, it's a decent job as well, you know, it's reporting in Scottish
football.
Well,
we've done a podcast with Grant. Grant loves his football.
Yeah.
Grant probably, if you had a conversation with him, would agree with exactly what you've just said. And I'm sure all the, well, they're as you said, it's a great job. I'm quite sure those journalists who drive the hits to their website would love to be standing pitch side reporting on Scottish football.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's not their decision, it's their boss's decision. But I remember once, guy called, I think his name's Andy Devlin, used to be on STV, but he's now one of the executives at Sky Sports for football. Justifying why Sky spends so much money on the English Premiership, not Scottish football, was because Scottish fans will watch English football, but English fans wouldn't watch Scottish football. The point being, obviously, that the Scottish football product is not good enough to derive viewers from England, it's not worth their while spending that money. Well, I would argue that's because Scottish fans are more interested in football, so we will watch any football.
Yeah.
Whereas English fans are a far more fair-weather supporter. So actually, that type of attitude is taking Scottish football fans for granted, because we can give them any old crap and they'll watch it because they love football so much they'll watch any football. I would argue that's more of the reason why, rather than, yes, our product, but that's also a self-fulfilling catch-22, to mix my metaphors.
Yeah.
If Sky pump billions of pounds into English football and nobody puts money into Scottish football, patently our product's going to go down as theirs goes up.
Yeah. Sky's a problem. Also the fact that we have license fee tax, and that the person in charge of BBC Sport openly says that when it's pointed out to her about the subsidy of Scottish viewers subsidising the contracts for Match of the Day, doesn't see any issue with that at all. That, for instance, Hansen's contract was bigger than the entire contract they were giving to broadcast Scottish football.
I mean, it's hard.
It's an issue. Sorry to interrupt you, but it's actually an issue about Scottish businesses, and that Scottish political parties on all sides should be interested in. This is the reason why, when a team like Rotherham, who have less fans or whatever than say Aberdeen, but everyone knows they could buy an Aberdeen player. Because our license fee isn't being used in paying for broadcast rights for our game. When, up until about a year or two ago, when I'd go back home to Britain, they would have the entire football league being shown across the UK.
Yep.
Anyway, going on there.
Well, STV.
A bit of a rant here.
Sorry. Yeah, but STV, who don't broadcast Scottish football, made a big deal of the fact that they were going to be broadcasting the Scotland-England game, only because the ITV network have a contract to show England games, and they just then put a bit of Scottish production on an event that would have been shown on Scottish television anyway, because it's an English game that gets shown. I mean, I know it's changed, but when, up until a few years ago, when ITV got showed Champions League football, and STV didn't bid for the Scottish broadcast rights, and left it to be plopped into the UK national bidding process, and then we had no coverage of, we had no domestic, before UEFA decided that it would go to satellite and pay channels only, when they were still having terrestrial channels, we had no domestic broadcaster bidding for the Scottish rights for Scottish football, for Champions League football.
Am I right in saying that for Champions League nights in Scotland, Celtic aren't necessarily shown? I seem to remember there's an instance when Celtic were on TV. Celtic were playing a Champions League game.
I think we had to press the red button for Celtic because we weren't on one of the channels.
There's also another thing that, like, so then UEFA for the TV, I forget the kind of jargon term they use for it, but basically maybe about 30% of the TV revenue, or the UEFA money revenue or whatever, how it's divided, is partly due to the TV contribution that your country makes.
Yeah,
I forget the term they use. So you see kind of like vast differentials between, say, Bate Borisov's and, say, Juventus or whatever. So Celtic's is in the UK broadcasting kind of pot.
Yeah.
But we're only, despite there only being five UK teams, we only get 10% of that.
We get Scotland's pro rata bit, even though we are lumped into the UK bidding bit.
Yeah. And there are five representatives, we get 10% of it.
Yeah.
Now, actually, in some ways, we're making a point that, you know, it should be either, you know,
20.
A fifth, 20%. There's another way of looking at it, is because STV put nothing into it. Well, we are less than Belarus, what the Belarus company puts in.
Yeah.
In some ways, UEFA could say, well, your country doesn't provide us with any advertising revenue. Sorry. Talk to STD about it, not us. Anyway.
But on the same point, football doesn't help itself. The simple thing for me, the SPFL, turn round to Rangers Football Club and say, we understand you're in dispute, but you know what? And this is the way the world works in normal business world. I understand you're in dispute. I couldn't give a monkey's. They're our preferred audio provider. So here's the deal, Rangers. Sort out your differences or you're getting no broadcast revenues. Because you're impacting on the commerciality of our business, because we have a main audio broadcaster in the BBC and a main highlights provider for terrestrial football, terrestrial channels in the BBC. You're not providing audio access, so when big games happen of Celtic Aberdeen Hearts going to Ibrox, we get very poor coverage. If Aberdeen and Hearts go, we get zero coverage, because at least for the Celtic game they could commentate from the TV coverage.
Yeah.
And we get no post-match interviews. We get no post-match interviews for the highlights package. So, dear Rangers, fix it. And until you fix it, you're getting no money. They would fix it like that. So that's one thing. And the second thing...
It's completely basic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine a Dallas Cowboys not talking to Fox or ESPN or whoever have the rights over there. Like the NFL would just like, it would be a 2-minute phone call.
Great. Yeah, but they've annoyed us. Couldn't care. If you want your money, fix it. Let their guy back in. Couldn't care less. That's what they'd be getting told. And then the other aspect of that is that as a consequence, we get crap highlights packages, we get the crap deal, and we get no support from the politicians. And again, from the information I can find, I've done my analysis that Scottish football, just for Glasgow, generates, what was that, I found out, roughly £200 million a year to the Glasgow economy.
Uh-huh.
Particularly when we're playing Champions League football. Well, that's me doing some borrowing, index linking from here, taking some stats from there. Scottish football should commission Glasgow University, whichever university's got the best economics, business analysis, market research division with the best reputation, hire them to get the best report they can to every single, and I would then have that report in my back pocket, and I'd be on the phone every time there was a negative piece in the paper. I'd phone the editor. We generate £200 million a year. What the F are you playing at? Every time a politician says something negative, I would phone STV, BBC, can I be interviewed, please? Get your cameras down here. And if they wouldn't interview, I'd walk up to their door, knock on the door. Hi, it's Harry Brady here, Chief Executive of the SPFL. I'm here for the interview. What interview? The interview that I'm insisting you give me in the next 5 minutes. And I'll sit down and say, very disappointed in Nicola Sturgeon, playing around, doing her thing, with the health service being crap, and the education being crap, and that having. And so she's blaming Scottish football as a bad guy for society, because we generate £200 million. What other industry? And do you know what? If you did that every single day, they'd soon get fed up with it. Mm-hmm. So Scottish football, for my hobby horse bit, Scottish football only is itself to blame at times for letting itself get the kicking and not fixing it. But you're right. You are coming in with fresh eyes, and the big thing that you tweeted was articulating what I was thinking as I was driving away. We've got our most sellable product.
Uh-huh.
And we criticise it, don't cover it, and don't cover it. I've been checking. Can you tell me, and can anyone else tell me, has there been a BBC Sports Sound podcast on the Celtic Rangers game?
I don't think. I remember I was looking for about 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, and there wasn't one.
On my
podcast stream on my iPhone, I can only pick up. If I go in as we are speaking and I go to feed, it's the first podcast it's given me in 2017, 6th of January, Hibs beat Dundee United 3-0 at Easter Road.
Yeah. It's funny, in my I'm going away, I'm digressing a little bit here. It's just about like worldwide rights
and the SPFL.
Now, we have one of the best. Something quite interesting is that, say, three of the best four or five derbies in the world, ours, say, Galatasaray, Fenerbahce, Boca River, they don't have a worldwide audience, and yet they're generally recognised as being like the craziest derbies in the world. But no one watches them. I don't watch, like, I have never seen a live game of Galatasaray Fenerbahce.
No.
And I would like to. If it was on a Saturday night, Sunday night, I would tune in almost just to see, you know, how crazy it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they're going to be kind of competing for the league, so it kind of adds that kind of element to it as well. I don't think Boca River has ever been shown live on any mainstream TV in Britain.
I'm not aware of it.
And similarly, even before I went to Argentina, I would have been interested in that. So none of these countries have... You might be able to find Galatasaray Fenerbahce in some Turkish cafe anywhere around the world. You might be able to go to a Scottish-Irish bar anywhere around the world. And so they have that kind of worldwide, you know, within the diaspora. But it's not promoted beyond the diaspora. So while we're waiting interminably to get an invite from the EPL that will never happen, or no one does anything to promote an Atlantic League, it's kind of, there's a supposition that you have to change your league. Like, the reason you change your league is to get bigger TV money.
Yeah.
And the supposition is that you have to then change your league, like create a new league or go down to a different league, and then that's how you get that TV money. But if these countries join up and liaise with each other and coordinate their fixtures properly and sell it as a package, so you have your four countries, ourselves, Turkey, Argentina, and maybe Holland or Portugal, whatever. And so each of the four components has 9 weekends where they show their best games. And you don't compete with England or Spain because the whole world follows are Barca or Real going to win the league this year or whatever. You're not competing with them, but you are competing with France, Germany and Italy. And you're saying to worldwide TV, every time your viewers tune in, they're going to see a crazy game. They're going to see the best atmosphere in the world.
Yeah.
Or they can tune in and watch Bastia versus Marseille. They can tune in and watch Leverkusen versus Duisburg or whatever. Or they can tune in the same weekend and we're going to give you Galatasaray Fenerbahce, Racing Club versus Boca, Celtic Rangers, whatever. And you coordinate your fixtures, you put it out, you divide it up between the four different components, and it would come out much more favourably than the non-existent TV worldwide rights we have currently.
Yeah.
It seems strange to me that this is never, you know, like, no one's ever mentioned anyway. Another thing, which isn't mutually exclusive to this, is that in the last decade, both Chile and the Netherlands have created their own league channels. Chile have about 17 million people. I think Netherlands more or less the same. About 5 years ago, then I think the Netherlands one was operating from 2008, and about 5 years ago, Murdoch bought a 51% stake in the Eredivisie Live for €1 billion over the next 12 years. The Chilean one, now remember, like, a Chilean one whose the GNP is approximately half of ours.
Yep.
They have a premium subscription and a basic subscription. They started it in 2003. As of 2015, they were making over $50 million a year profit. PricewaterhouseCooper valued the CDF, the Canal de Football in Chile, at just under $1 billion. And we have Sky Sports doing absolutely nothing for Scottish football. There are other outlets. You can, like, there are other ways to broadcast Scottish football.
Yeah, I mean,
and BT, these are big countries.
BT do a better job, but I have long thought we're stuck in a, where you create a TV channel and you put the games on. I have long thought that if you did something, a Netflix style streaming, but also incorporated some element of when you buy that contract, if you are a season book holder with a team, there is a pick some figures, it's £5 a month cheaper for you if you're a season book holder at Celtic than it is to get the support, the season book holders to buy, effectively to get Celtic supporters to buy a season booked for watching Celtic away games, and do that for every club.
Yeah.
And then incorporate within that, actually maybe showing all games at the same time, kickoffs at the same time, 3 o'clock on a Saturday, 2 o'clock on a Sunday, whatever time it is. Try and actually have goals as they're scored shown in the ground. But just not just think, well, okay, let's just have a crappier version of what the English have got. No, let's have something that's just, get a blank piece of paper and say, in the 21st century, you know, there's an interesting piece in the FT this week about how the NBA are looking beyond TV contracts. They're looking beyond TV into selling rights online and various other ways of doing it. I think one of the things they've trialled is setting cameras up so that you've got virtual reality as if you were sitting in the dugout, that you could watch a game with virtual reality in, I don't know what a dugout's called in basketball, I'm not that into basketball, but just offering a unique product, you know, offering a product that if you press the red button you get a completely different commentary where actually your viewing of the game last two, you know, you might only have a niche market for it, but people might pay for it who want this, where your viewing of the game last 2 hours, because when something happens in a game it's paused instantly for a tactical analysis of what's just happened. But make it different, not just not just crappy versions of Sky. But that all takes innovation, and it takes balls in the negotiation, and it takes the other football. I've had this conversation with someone at Celtic about the last TV deal, and the problem was that the other 11 teams in the league, just instruction was just get a deal done because they just needed the money, and no one was prepared to say the deal's not correct. That was exactly what the instructions were, just get a deal done. Celtic were the only club who could afford to say that deal's not good enough, we'll walk away, but they were the vote wasn't won 11. Anyway, that's the TV. Very quickly, because I've got a 6-year-old boy who's decided that he's too wide awake for bed at the moment. Celtic have made one signing so far in the transfer window. What are your thoughts?
There's lots of little parts. Like, I don't think anyone's really seen him apart from, you know, people in the scouting within Celtic, but there's lots of little indications that are quite positive about it. Firstly, it gives an implication that Rodgers is here long term, to sign a 19-year-old boy as opposed to another kind of
Scott Sinclair.
Also, there's everyone hates when this is mentioned, but resale, obviously, because we do need it. We basically rely on it to kind of obviously with the Van Dijk, Wanyama, whatever, so that then we can reinvest in a higher level than we were able to if we don't have that. I would expect, just from seeing like a very limited amount of clips, I would expect him to be a kind of so I'm going to interrupt myself here. There was a very interesting interview that Rodgers gave with a Liverpool podcast when he first took over at Liverpool, and it goes on for about an hour. It's on YouTube. Uh-huh. And when Rodgers joined Celtic, quite a lot of people were posting it up on Twitter. I'd recommend anyone listen to it. And it's basically, it gets quite tactical at one point, and he kind of sets out, it might have changed, but at that time he basically wanted one kind of pivot defensive midfielder where Brown's been playing basically in front of the back four, and he wanted two central midfielders to be going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that this boy isn't going to be sitting.
Yep.
Just by looking at his clips, he seemed to be like kind of perfect for what Rodgers has been speaking about 3 years before. A boy with loads of energy who goes back and forth, athletic, strong. I'd imagine that that's going to be that he, Armstrong, and Rodgers are going to be competing for those two places. Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine he's more similar to Armstrong than he is to Rodgers.
Yep.
But you need at least three people in there, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. You can't rely on the same 11, 14 players. You need three. If we could two, you need at least four players for three positions of the Rodgers, Armstrong, Brown currently. You need at least four for those three, possibly five for those three positions.
Yeah. It's going to be something I'm quite interested in is how we replace Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
And not many people have really mentioned it. Like, people have said, we need another centre midfielder. But actually, we've been okay there. We're a wee bit weak in Europe. But when Rodgers goes...
Roberts.
When Roberts goes, we are going to be quite light. We're going to have Forrest on one side, St. Clair on the other. Mm-hmm. And you probably need three players of about the same level, more or less, all pushing each other. And St. Clair's basically got that position locked down.
Yeah.
So you need someone who's going to be like possibly an improvement on Forrest, or at least, pushing him, being right at that level.
You don't think he would try and keep Roberts?
It depends how much it'd be. I wouldn't expect it.
No.
I wouldn't expect it. Like, I don't think he's really suited to it. I think you want players who can break away.
Getting back to your earlier point of Dembele goes to a team for £30 million, you can still sell him on for 25. I would be surprised if a player leaving Man City, we could pick him up for 1.5-2 million, which means he's likely to be even cheap, would be three and a half million.
Yeah.
And as the point I've made a couple of times, I just can't see you spending £3.5 million on a guy who's not the first choice for that position.
No. When Villa and Newcastle go up, a club like that would be comfortable spending £5-6 million on.
Yeah.
Like Palace, whatever.
So if we're going to be signing between one and three more players in the transfer window, what positions do you see us signing?
That top right position to compete with Forrest. And
personally, I could although we have the numbers there just now, the right back position, I would be more comfortable with a right back who's very comfortable in possession in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And when we've got the ball in Europe, so when we're away passing the ball about a bit in the like Mönchengladbach, having a player that is completely comfortable in the ball, receiving the ball in limited spaces under pressure. That's what Lustig has been very good for about 4 or 5 years, but I don't think from now for the next 2 or 3 years he's. Well, I don't think he's ever been especially comfortable on the ball. in tight situations.
Yeah.
And because he isn't especially quick on the turn anymore, like, there's a tendency for him just to kind of almost stay back as the back three.
Yeah.
And we have either Izzy or Kieran going up the left. And that he's more kind of tucked in, more restrained. Gambo is a big improvement on Janko.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would be a position, although we have the numbers, like, two guys are fairly decent, I think you could improve that side, to be honest.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Any other position?
And a striker.
No.
You could possibly say centre-back, depending on how many centre-backs score.
Yeah.
But anyway, those would be my priorities just now.
Okay, well, I would have gone into that bit more, but time's against me. As I say, I've got a 6-year-old who's now watched Dino Kings for an hour longer than his mum would know if she listened to the podcast. So, great parenting. I've stuck him in front of Netflix to finish this podcast. So, I better say, Mark Cooper, thanks very much.
Good to speak to you, Harry.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed the chat there with Mark Cooper and weren't too jealous of the temperatures that he's got, unless, of course, you're in Australia or some parts of the United States or around the rest of the world where many of our listeners are, and then you're probably having the same temperature as him. Anyway, as we all know, a football club will be formed for the maintenance of dinner tables for the children and the unemployed. That's our football club. And in 1994, Fergus McCann, in addition to the share issue, launched the Celtic Charity, which has transformed into the Celtic FC Foundation. And since then, since Fergus brought it in, it has raised £13.5 million to deliver up to 30 vital community projects every year across Scotland, Ireland and England. 83,538 meals have been provided by Glasgow North East Food Bank due to one fully funded position by the Celtic FC Foundation. 5,451 people benefit from the Celtic FC Foundation projects in a year. And the work is done across 27 countries. I'm very proud of that aspect of Celtic. I'm very proud of the Celtic FC Foundation. So if you want to become involved, text CHAMPION, CHAMPION, to 700 20, obviously in the UK only, that's 720, to give £3 a month, or visit CelticFCFoundation.com/CHAMPION. And there's also been various things online as to how you can get a twibbon, if that's the word, on your Twitter avatar. Anyway, enough of that. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper. There'll be more podcasts along soon. Next Celtic game can't come quick enough, although I do like the concept of a winter break, not about because of the weather, which has been cold the last couple of days, more just to give fans a break, allow us to do normal things with our families, and then become even more obsessed with Celtic after the break. Anyway, this is me, Harry B, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.